Hi guys, my name's Johnny Scott and I'd like to welcome you to Phoenix On Demand, or POD as we like to call it. This is the fifth in our series of podcasts where we'll be looking to help educate and hopefully entertain you on all things IT. Today we'll be talking about a vast but very relevant topic in today's modern public sector, and that is the topic of smart cities and smart regions. So we've seen an increase in UK public sector organisations collaborating with a view of delivering improved services while continuing to drive efficiencies. This collaboration is increasingly at a city and regional level and involves different types of agencies coming together with the ultimate ambition of building an infrastructure that will enrich and empower the lives of its citizens. Following on from our successful events around smart regions in the age of digital disruption, in this episode of POD, we'll be looking at the key technological challenges and opportunities facing public sector organisations, both locally as they look to transform their own businesses and regionally as they look to collaborate and drive positive outcomes. So today I'm joined by Keith Martin, Phoenix's Sales Director, Craig Taylor, Phoenix's Cloud Solutions Director, and our very special guest, David Prosser, CEO at one of our most strategic partners, Community. So hi, guys. Thanks for joining me today. Hey. How are we all doing?
Yeah, really good, thank you.
Good. Thanks, Johnny. Thank you for having us.
Good. You're very welcome. So I'm going to kick things off and get straight into the meat of things. So can we get a quick introduction from you all? And if you would, an explanation on your exposure to smart cities and smart regions and what you're seeing out there when speaking to UK public sector clients specifically. So Keith, let's start with you.
Thanks, Johnny. So yeah, Keith Martin, Sales Director at Phoenix. I think this is a subject that has been very interesting for us over the last 12, 24 months, and if not a bit longer. I think what we're really seeing now is the evolution of shared service in the public sector. It's no longer, I don't know, a council sharing information with a council and trying to make some short-term savings. We're really now looking at regions and multi-agency engagements, and I think that's where we've really tried to think what that means to us and the way we service our public sector clients.
Absolutely. Thanks for that, Keith. David?
So David from Community. So what we're seeing is quite a lot of confusion from public sector customers, really trying to understand, you know, what does smart city mean? What does smart city mean to them? What are the initiatives that they need to run? What is the approach that they need to follow? And if you think about this, this is not... it's not surprising. It shouldn't be surprising to us. So in an age of digitization where we've seen massive transformation in the expectation of people in the way that they interact with services, and the huge innovations that have happened around service delivery across industries and segments, and the huge amounts of technology and process investment that have gone into creating the Ubers and Airbnbs of the world that everybody references and the Amazons of the world. Smart cities and government organizations are very, very complex organizations. And for the custodians of data, the IT department, to suddenly have to try and figure out how they're going to transform the operating model of this organization and digitize it in a way that their executives and their stakeholders, their customers, their employees, their partners of the city or government organization would expect to receive these consolidated services and experiences. It's really a tough ask. And, you know, the good thing is in the UK, these organizations, they're wrestling with this problem. They're trying to figure it out. And I think it falls to us, you know, the vendors and service providers to really take a step back from the products that we're trying to sell and walk the journey with them around helping them unpack this journey and how they execute on the journey that's relevant to them and their cities and communities.
Absolutely. Thank you, David. Craig?
Cool. I've got to follow these guys. Great introductions there. Craig Taylor, Cloud Solutions Director at Phoenix. Just building on what the guys are saying, it's really interesting. I think when we've been out working with customers on what we would have, I suppose, previously thought of as transformation or one more likely to modernization, you know, upgrading their systems, helping them get off legacy technology. The conversation's evolved over the last couple of years to how do we help them beyond the traditional way that perhaps Phoenix used to. And this is some of the areas that David and Keith have talked about. So how do we help them work better with other organizations? How do we help them address some of the bigger social challenges that a local authority has to face? I think from a Phoenix point of view, we see it as a really interesting perspective across local gov, housing associations, education institutes. And I think we've been having probably separate conversations with organizations in those sectors and are starting to now see themes where we can join some of these common challenges and technologies together. And I think that, for me, is where we're seeing the potential to do something smarter at a regional level by joining some of these things up. Mm-hmm.
I think the other thing we have seen, sorry, I know you've got some questions to dive into, Johnny.
No, fine.
I think some of the other things we have seen is if you go back over a number of years, the UK public sector has been forced to innovate. And that innovation now is not just, they've moved far from just keeping lights on and doing what they have to do to keep their business going. It's now how they can take that step further, both by trying to save some money, but also really enhancing the lives of, be it citizens, patients, students, tenants, whatever it may be. And as Craig says, joining those all together, those agencies coming together, yes, you get economies of scales, but you get far richer outcomes as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely. So I had this question as one of the last ones, but given what we've talked about there, I'll ask it now. So a question to you all, I guess, where does someone start and who's responsible within a region or city to hang this all together? We've talked about multiple agencies or organizations from within a region having some shared responsibility in this, but who's responsible for that, and what's the first step?
I think we obviously, maybe Craig and I can talk a little bit about the UK side of things, but maybe David, this could be a good question from your experience. You've lived and breathed this with customers. So how have you seen it in some of the engagements you've had? Where has it started?
So like anything good, it can start anywhere in the organization. Be that kind of at a political level with the mayor or an executive level with somebody who's like a city manager. Mm-hmm. It can start with a very innovative IT lead, somebody in customer service. What generally tends to happen is that we see these successful smart government initiatives begin with the believer. So somebody who believes in a better way of running the department or the city or the town and believes that digital technologies applied in the right way, it can help them to do this better. So more cost efficiently, better experiences, improved collections, etc. So there's no particular recipe other than that we've seen that it doesn't really work unless you have those believers. Mm-hmm. You are connected with the builders, and bearing in mind that those builders are the technology people inside the organization, the customer's organization, but also their ecosystem of partners. And something that I've seen is Smart City is not successful unless it's run as an ecosystem. Mm-hmm. There's no one company that's going to come and build a smart city for a customer. And then very importantly, the buyers. So the believers, the builders, and the buyers. Because at the end of the day, this we're talking about the public purse, and it has to make commercial sense.
Mm-hmm. I think from a UK perspective, we're starting to think more like that. Some of our experiences have been a local authority thinking about smart in quite specific ways. So it would be around smart parking, where they're looking to get more tourists into the beach in a summertime. So how do you optimize that one particular thing to benefit the local area? Yeah. Or how do we manage street lighting better and make that smarter to save on our energy bills? And I'm sure there's probably thousands of conversations across the UK going on within different parts of councils or central government agencies, just talking about all these little miniature smart initiatives. But it's what we are now seeing is a change that if you can put that onto some kind of platform or join that up, or even you start to get economies of scale, you start to move away from having to procure lots and lots of different solutions from lots and lots of different vendors. And I think what's probably holding it back slightly in the UK is that can get very expensive very quickly as well.
Yes.
And a bit disjointed. So if you have the believers and the technology and some of that can be standardized and, or repeated and shared, it hopefully makes achieving smart a bit cheaper and more joined up.
So, Craig, you're hitting the nail on the head, and this is not just in the UK, but the world over. Technology vendors tend to look at public sector as a segment with massive purse. But when you actually get down to it, each of these organizations and the directorates or departments within the organizations that have to execute on the strategy, their resources are quite limited. So if I were to build on the example that Craig was referencing there, so you want to do smart parking. Now, if you think about some of the building blocks that need to be in place for smart parking, so there's GIS and mapping. We need to know where that parking spot is. There's profile. Who's the person who's going to be parking? The connection to the vehicle. Some kind of a form if they need to select some kind of service. The ability to make a payment. The ability to push a notification to that person, a contextualized notification. Now, all of those building blocks are relevant to all sorts of other services, like reporting potholes or applying for a new electricity meter, or managing refuse services, or disaster management, or transport management. So this platform approach that for cities to build out a platform that is going to manage multiple digital workloads for them in a replicable way. Can you imagine for all the services you get from your town or city, and they're all pushing you different notifications from different vendor platforms, and they're asking you to log in and use different payment systems to pay for all of your services? I mean, would you adopt that as a user?
No.
You just wouldn't.
No. Well, no. If Amazon did it that way, would they be as successful as they are?
No. Yeah,
exactly. I think, you know, that there's, it's understanding the art of the possible, isn't it? I think that, we've said it on some of the other media that we've done. No one wakes up and thinks, okay, I'm going to create a smart city today. Yeah. It's not a light switch. If you're to do that, it's hugely expensive. Actually, it probably never get done. It never gets signed off. The platform approach where you can find what is potentially a relatively quick but empowering win and then expand it out from there, building exactly on how David's articulated far better than I ever can, is really the approach that we're starting to see. And if I look at, you'll hear things in the press about devolution or things such as that. We're seeing things where some of our customers are forming sort of regional boards. It's not as formal as a devolution play or a formal shared service play. They're just trying to think about how they can do things better for their region and their citizens. And that's interesting because then you start to get the common themes. And then, as David says, once you've got the right people on board there, one of them will make a jump and then it'll quickly roll across the rest.
Mm, absolutely. And you mentioned shared services there, Keith.
Yeah.
Where do you think shared services or multi-agency shared services come into all of this? Do you think they play an important role in bringing this together?
Really important role. Yeah. And I think over the years, we've seen many different types of shared service, some working really well, some being quite challenging. Mm. You know, there's politics in play as well that we have to deal with. But it's interesting that a lot of these multi-agency engagements we're seeing, they have almost evolved organically. They've almost come together rather than being smashed together because there's an ulterior motive there. Mm. It really has been more about what could we do together rather than we need to come together and share a finance system. So it's more outcome-based rather than maybe crude cost-cutting. That's probably not the way to explain it. But you understand, they're looking forward rather than just trying to smash their organisations together. You know, a hospital will still be a hospital, a council will still be a council. But actually, they both serve citizens. So there's got to be some common themes there that they can work together on.
Yeah. The other angle on that is we've seen universities involved in some of these discussions because they're seen as the place that the talent of that area or that region is going to be coming from. So a lot of the public sector organisations are, I suppose, keen to make sure they're developing great services and great organisations, great culture, because they want to attract the talent that perhaps that local city or, you know,
I guess
city.
Attract the talent,
a talent that's been in region and keep it there and
retain
develop
the talent.
It and,
yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So I'm a classic example of that. Yeah. I went to university and stayed in the town I went. Though actually, that implies I'm a talent, but maybe not. that's really important. Yeah. Actually, some of the cities we speak to, that's so relevant when they talk about retaining talent, because. So there's some cracking universities who people go to and then disappear back to wherever they live or maybe down to London or somewhere else. If those cities can retain some of that talent there, suddenly that workforce, they have a workforce. Mm. And so some people struggle to find a workforce.
Mm. Absolutely. And David, you mentioned earlier around, the younger generation have all this incredible innovative technology at their fingertips. And, you know, if only the local region and the university and the blue light services, healthcare services, would join together and come up with something to equate to that type of technology, that on-demand technology that they have, that's quite powerful, right? And that would surely keep these people within region, or it's at least one reason for them to stay and take part in that community.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, I think that more and more, towns and cities and regions will use smart technology, so readily accessible smart technology, as a base for competition to attract people, to drive economic development of the town or the region, to drive taxation, I think it's something that can't even be argued. You know, mm-hmm. cities and towns do compete for skills and industry anyway. And those that have the best services offerings that are the most digitally enabled will attract the best. Mm.
Do you think that regions and cities will be competing with each other to drive more innovative projects around smart cities and smart regions? Could that be a thing? Is that happening? Could it
happen? It's not uncommon though. If you do an internet search on smart something, or every city's got a version of it. Mm. It's interesting. Certainly in the UK, there's a number of large cities, but there's also a lot of smaller communities and towns and places that wouldn't necessarily think of themselves as a city. So they're almost competing as, how do we create a smart community of smaller villages in some cases, or like an identity around something. So, when you've got the Northeast, you've got Yorkshire, you've got these areas, these regions with very strong identities and perhaps different geographic makeups to Manchester, which is a very large city, or Birmingham. Mm. You're going to have almost the bigger cities competing against these smaller community spaces as well. And then within those communities, they're almost competing against the other version, because we've talked about one Yorkshire and all these other variations. I don't think there's any clear answer, but they're almost all having to come up with their own unique offering to try and differentiate themselves and have their own identity in that digital space, as well as cultural.
Identity, I think, is actually really important and should be understated, because I also think it helps with retention of talent and things such as that. Mm. I think you often see public sector bodies getting beaten up on by the press or by TV about when a service goes wrong without anyone really highlighting the services that go well. And we live and breathe public sector. We see the phenomenal work they've done, the challenges they have, the innovation they've been through. But if you can get your citizens bought into what you're trying to deliver, if you are delivering a state-of-the-art service, you talk about kids of today and interacting with mobiles. I know David and I have spent time talking about how the platform he has means that you can manage everything through your phone. You can interact. Customer service is key. If you contact a council, they know who you are. You can react to it. Mm-hmm. It's not you have to turn up on a Wednesday to go and see a council at 10 o'clock. And if you miss your appointment, it's 5 weeks later. You interact on your terms. The user experience is far better. Therefore, the impression of the council is far better. The service being delivered is better. You're more likely to retain your talent.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, and then just another interesting angle that I believe will develop is as these communities build out smart solutions, you will see that there will be certain cities and towns that solve certain problems in a very effective way. You know, whether that be around transportation or ports management, for port cities and towns. And that IP and those solutions could become exportable. So almost we have a network of smart cities who are selling IP and solutions to each other to expedite the way that they solve each other's problems. Mm. Now, of course, we will put our hands together and pray that most of those solutions are built on our technologies. Mm. But, you know, at the end of the day, what as Keith often says, is what people want are outcomes. They don't want to buy software. They want to buy outcomes. Mm. Now, if you can buy a guaranteed outcome from a reputable city that solved the problem, mm-hmm. why wouldn't you?
Yeah. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. So Keith, you touched a bit on some of the restrictions to the UK government in the current times. What restrictions on the UK public sector will stop driving the innovation that's required to embrace a true smart regions approach? A question to all of you.
Yeah, it's a great question. For me, I'd say I'd probably flip it and say you're not going to stop it. The innovation's there. Mm. The challenges that you have are, I think, as the guys articulated earlier, is that someone who's so ambitious that they want to do it all at once, the bill grows astronomically and the implementation takes a million years and it's never going to happen. Mm. I think the ability to have someone who can truly understand the outcomes they're trying to drive, I think within the business themselves, understanding the problems they really have. Because actually, smart is often treated as a buzzword. It used to be called City Next. It'll be called something else in the future. It's not necessarily about the word. It's about the outcomes you're delivering within your business. Mm. So there will always be challenges there. Austerity is going. No, it's not. There's still going to be financial constraints. You're going to have the political landscape, which again can cause frictions between organizations maybe coming together. You're going to, much as health, police, universities are all share common themes, they are fundamentally different types of organizations. You need the believers, as David mentioned earlier, to really bring together key leadership people within those organizations with a really aspiration to drive an improved region for everyone. Mm. I mean, you would have lived the challenges that public sector bodies have faced in some of the engagements you've had globally, David. I mean, again, it might be worth sharing some of those.
Well, the one thing that I wanted to pull out for particular focus is the threat of not applying enough credence to the importance of excellent digital engineering, because it is not simple to build these a digital ecosystem type services, which a smart city has to be, and to really understand A, what you want to achieve, what the outcomes are that the city is looking for and that their constituents are looking for, but very importantly, what is the digital architecture that is required to be able to make to bring this together successfully? Because you get that wrong, and you could very easily be spending tens and hundreds of millions of pounds and not achieving what you were setting out to achieve.
I think defining success is critical, isn't it? What is good here? When you're entering into whatever aspect of project it is, when do you know it's gone well and you're not just chucking money at it time and time and time again?
Exactly. And if you look at the bouquet of digital technologies that are available to organizations, be that cloud or apps or, web technologies and social media and push notifications and analytics and digital CRM and, API surfaces and integrations, et cetera. It's the cocktail. It's the recipe of these technologies and how they come together to create the outcomes that's really going to create the exponential success. We saw in a presentation earlier this year from the IDC that the time for experimenting with fragmented digital projects is over. Mm. It's just not creating the outcomes that organizations would expect.
I think some of that modernization that has been happening in the UK public sector over the last decade, but more recently, has allowed for some of that to more possible in some ways, because they might have looked at their data architecture or have access to more stuff in the cloud, or publicly available information, or smartphone use, or IoT. Like, there's just more information, I think, available as well for some of these organizations to do something with, which hopefully puts some of them in a good position to, like we've talked about, start actually doing something seriously with this and no longer just playing around with it. Mm. Some of the building blocks are now in place to go and do something, you know, smart very quickly, which will hopefully be repeatable elsewhere.
Yeah. And I think for those who get it right, they'll see remarkable outcomes.
Absolutely, absolutely. And Keith, you and David have both talked about the believers. We might have some believers listening to this podcast. So if someone's listening to this thinking, yes, you know, I'm passionate about this, what's your one piece of advice? What's their next step? What do they need to do now to go and have a conversation with someone, or to start an idea, to get something moving?
Do you mind if I go first?
Oh, I was going to urge you to, David.
It's on Twitter.
So, you want to begin with the end in mind. And I would strongly recommend an assessment-based approach. So, we've seen that Phoenix has put some fantastic work into creating a very robust smart city readiness assessment together. Looking at this through the lens of my own experiences around the world, you know, I think it's a very strong framework that is going to give customers a template for success, without focusing on any particular technologies to be able to solve the problem. Mm-hmm. So I would strongly recommend, an engagement around that type of assessment to basically set the compass.
Mm-hmm. I think that the great thing about that is an assessment-based approach is also, from a customer point of view, very low risk, isn't it? So what a customer doesn't want to do, or what a public sector body doesn't want to do, is go, okay, I want to spend this amount of money on getting an outcome across my whole region without really understanding the complexity of what they're embarking upon. Yeah. So that approach really, really sort of takes that pain point away and gives them the knowledge that actually is very difficult to find otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Good point. I think we've also designed it to help with something that we've seen in public sector. We deal with a lot of tender situations and frameworks, and actually people putting out content requesting services around building smart solutions or smart cities. But the scope of that is so broad that I guess the results or the responses to some of those requests is not going to be very good. And we've actually seen a couple of examples where things have gone out like that. And imagine that organization has just had zero responses, because actually the people it's going out to or the market are just sitting there going, scratching their heads a little bit, going, where do I start with this? What is it? What are the specifics? So some of the assessment, I guess, we've designed to almost help people understand and join up the dots to say, well, what is it you're actually looking for? So you can go out and ask informed questions about what it is you need, or what type of budget are you looking for some of this stuff, because I guess there's so many different versions of smart city solutions out there that you could be getting anything from a smart wheelie bin solution to something.
Yeah, to CCTV, traffic lights, or whatever it'll be.
So some of that, I think, is helping some of the people that we're doing this work with now. It's really helping them understand, well, what options are there? What have I already got in place that we could be using? Yes. And what are other people doing which I might not be aware of? To start making better choices.
It moves back to what we're saying earlier. It talks about outcomes. So what we don't want to talk about is wheelie bins and potholes, A, because they're probably incredibly dull to talk about, but B, you're talking about technology again. You're talking about products that a customer potentially needs to buy. What we want to talk about is outcomes that will change the impact on their citizens and on the people they are serving. And it's a very different approach to rocking up and saying, do you want to buy some of this?
Absolutely. And everybody's talked about how data and the data that's generated through these initiatives is so important to the whole process. And that obviously brings a question into this around the public cloud. Is that a key component of this? Or do you think a lot of these solutions will be sitting in more on-premise environments? Or will it be a hybrid approach? Will it be across multiple data centers, across multiple regions, maybe?
Without a doubt, a hybrid approach.
Yeah.
And the the last thing that any of us should be trying to do is to trying to get customers to move all of their systems of record and management to the cloud. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that those systems need to be sweated, and they will migrate to the cloud organically as and when they reach end of life and customers are more comfortable with cloud and because of the economic efficiencies. This space where you're connecting the inside and the outside, so those traditional systems, experiences running on people's phones and websites and, you know, other edge technologies, IoT and things like that. Mm-hmm. I believe that the place to do that innovation is in the cloud, because of the access to on-demand resources. So the cost-efficient access to secure on-demand resources. Obviously, keeping in mind the important security frameworks in terms of what needs to stay on-premise and behind the DMZ. Very, very importantly, issues around data governance and compliance, so matters like GDPR.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And the cloud is the right place to do this. Just mm-hmm. speaking from my own personal experience, I've seen customers across many regions, you know, say that when they build their digital platforms, they need to be built on premise. And of course, you know, being a customer focused organization, will say for sure, we can do this for you on premise. Please provision the following resources mm-hmm. for us to be able to do this and demonstrate scale to you. They'll say, well, let's do the proof of value or the pilot in the cloud, and then we'll move it on premise before we go live. And not in a single instance have I ever seen, and this is being led by the customer, you know, not by technology vendors. I've never seen an instance where these types of digital systems connecting internal and external processes with context, I've never seen an instance where they move from the cloud to on-premise. Mm-hmm. But it's got to be done at the customer's pace in a way that they're comfortable mm-hmm. with.
I think part of these initiatives as well will require things like artificial intelligence, yeah. Internet of Things. If we think about the streetlights that you referred to earlier, Craig, you know, everything needs to be connected. There, you know, to build them kind of solutions on premise could be quite costly and expensive.
It's also access to the skills within that organization to do some of that work.
Absolutely,
in the cloud, it's all there. You know, other vendors have built these solutions, so you can access data and AI services, cognitive services, intelligence services that you just point at your data and mm-hmm. it's done. So you don't have to have a team of data scientists or people modeling this stuff out. You've got access to those resources. And that's where the speed at which people can do smart things is vastly accelerated, because without having to scratch their heads or go, oh, how do we solve this problem? We need to get this expert resource in. It's all there. We can just provision it from the cloud.
So all of the technologies that you referenced, they rely on data to be successful, and more than just data, metadata. So where would the intelligent core be that this metadata is flowing in and out of the organization? It's more than likely going to be in the cloud.
Mm.
And then you'll build out the bouquet of digital technologies to be able to leverage and enhance that metadata to create the services of the future that are going to impact citizens and other constituents.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So I think we'll finish off on a question to our special guest, David. So David, you've seen smart projects from all over the world. You've seen some really successful ones and probably some not so successful ones. Where do you think the UK public sector should be looking to innovate to get the quickest results?
So that is a very tough question to really nail in on, because depending on the communities that the cities are servicing, it may be that transport is the burning problem, or public safety, or healthcare. Or as I said earlier, ports management. Ports are very much in my mind because I was with a big ports customer in Kenya last week. So if I could maybe take a different approach mm-hmm. and say, in order to create traction,
they need to focus on the burning issues that they can solve quickly, because success builds success. And without doubt, they need to take a platform approach. So when they solve for that initial set of burning issues, make sure that they're doing it in a way that there are certain services or capabilities that can be leveraged across other workloads, so that they can get this exponential multiplier effect.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you.
Right, guys, thank you all for joining me today. That's been really interesting, actually. I've really enjoyed that episode. Thank you again for coming, and I hope you enjoyed your time here with us and Pod.
Not a problem at all, Johnny. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you for hosting us, Johnny.
No worries. Thanks, David. So that's it for this episode. Thanks for listening, and we hope you found it of use. Please get in touch if you want to discuss any points further. If you want to support what we do, please share and subscribe, and we'll see you in the next episode of Pod. Thank you.